You can buy books by my podcast guests and find other recommended arts and crafts techniques books by visiting uk.bookshop.org/shop/creativityfound. Don't worry, I've popped a link in the show notes. Plus, by buying from my shop, you'll be supporting this show with a little bit of affiliate loveliness. Thank you.
When I was looking at positions that I could be applying for, I just actually wasn't interested. And I had 3 days in this grotty basement, and it was just amazing. I was just on a high for 3 days. It was just like I was slotting into part of me that had been waiting there that I hadn't used for 40 years.
Hi, I'm Claire, founder of Open Stage Arts Drama and Singing Classes for Adults. Lots of the adults who come to our classes and online events are looking for a creativity that has been put on the back burner during their sensible grown-up years. I have found this to be true among other creatives too, so I've decided to find out more about the painters, photographers, writers, printmakers, actors, crafters, teachers, musicians, and more that have found or refound their creativity later in life. Following in her father's footsteps, Cecilia Poulin has had a successful career in law and finance. When she started seeing a Gestalt therapist, she discovered a source of creativity that she has continued to explore. Hi, Cecilia.
Hi, Claire.
Hi. You started actively exploring your creative side quite recently. Tell me what avenue of creativity you are pursuing.
Well, it's writing, really. There's been two things. The writing started relatively recently, but when I was a child, I played the piano a lot. And when I was in London in the early 1990s, I joined a choir with my brother was also in London, joined a choir with his flatmate. And one week she said to me, well, I can't go to my lesson on Saturday with the choir master. So she was taking singing lessons. And she said, would you like to go? And so I said, oh yeah, okay. I'll go off to your singing lesson. And then I loved it and just kept going. So I've actually been sort of singing and taking singing lessons since the early 1990s. So that's my old creativity, and my new creativity is the writing.
Brilliant. How was your experience of the arts at a younger age, so as a child at home or at school?
My mother was extremely artistic. She grew up on a farm in Queensland, and she loved horses, and so she used to draw, you know, fantastic horses. And I remember when I was about 7 or 8, I'd been struggling all day to draw an elephant, and my elephants just weren't coming out the way that I wanted. And she got a piece of newspaper and a pencil, and she just went, ba-da-da-da-da, and out came this amazing elephant. And so from that point I said, well, you know, there's not much point in me continuing this. So I stopped any idea of drawing or painting. She was always influential in the arts. She had a shop for a while, so she called it the Wall Hanging Shop, and so it was in the 70s, and it had, you know, macrame, and it had, you know, wool hangings that were made of wool and very textured, and lots of Aboriginal artifacts and bowls and all that sort of stuff. And she was also very interested in doing up houses, so she would buy ruins for very little, and then she would get very excited and start doing it at the houses, and so looking at the sorts of colours that would be good and just making them really beautiful. So she did that. And I remember too, when I was quite young, she gave me a book called Introduction to Art, which I still have, which is just like the masterpieces through the ages. she was just sort of always pushing, I think, that the artistic side. And as I said, I was playing the piano. I played the flute for a while as well. My father didn't have any of that. He was much more the breadwinner, the lawyer, doing master's degrees and much more intellectual. So there was this split in my family between my father, who was, he was like, you know, in law you talk about the reason, the man on the Clapham omnibus, and it was like the reasonable man, and my father was the reasonable man, or still is the reasonable man. And when my mother would ask him, what would you like for dinner, how much would you like for dinner, he would say, oh, just reasonable. Whereas my mother was much more about intuition and emotion, and it was very much a sort of classic male-female split in my parenting. So,
right. You mentioned that your father was a lawyer and you studied law. Are the two connected, and did you want to be a lawyer from a young age?
The two are definitely connected. I was very influenced by my father when I was young, and I always thought that I was like him. And the older I get, the more I move away from the way that he is, and more towards my mother, actually. You know, I was a good student. I was very conscientious, but I was not interested in sciences at all. I think the only exam in my life, actually, where I've ever walked out early was my year 11 chemistry exam. And I'd studied for it half an hour the night before, and I thought, well, there's absolutely no point. I don't have a clue what they're talking about. There's just no point. So there was no way I was going to be doing medicine. And if you're a good student in Australia, then if you didn't do medicine, then you did law. And I was always interested in words, and so it seemed like a good fit, and, you know, a good solid profession. And of course, I'd seen my father being a lawyer. It just seemed like the obvious thing to do.
Yeah. You've worked in law and finance and have always been good at what you do. Have you enjoyed your work?
I've always had a struggle with my work. There are bits of it that I have enjoyed, and what I've really enjoyed as a lawyer, in fact, has been writing contracts. I saw contracts as a puzzle, because you've got the definitions, and you have to make sure that the definitions are always used in the way that they were intended to be used throughout the contract, and it follows a certain logic. And so I loved getting those contracts right and using exactly the right word so that it was, you know, crystal clear. I realized over time that it wasn't the writing of the contract that I enjoyed, it was the writing. But at the same time, I struggled with politics, you know, office politics, and I struggled with how to be. There was always something that just wasn't quite right. I complained a lot about my job. I complained a lot about my bosses a lot. I had times when I had real conflict with my bosses, and I had difficulty working out how to deal with those conflicts. More and more, I saw my friends who were becoming partners in law firms and who were becoming senior counsel or in business and really enjoying it, and looking at them and thinking, well, what am I doing wrong? I finally realized that it wasn't what I was doing wrong, but when I was looking at positions that I could be applying for, I just actually wasn't interested. There was one position at work recently that was training people, and that was training people about financial products. And I thought, oh, I could do that. There's lots of writing involved in that. And then even that position, which was slightly more corresponded to me, in the end, I just didn't want to do it. So that was telling me that maybe this just wasn't the job for me.
Wow. And I think that possibly leads on to my next question. Your creative discovery was helped along the way by your Gestalt therapist. Can you tell me a little bit more about Gestalt therapy, why you sought it out and how it has helped you?
Sure. So Gestalt therapy is, I mean, I've never really looked into the history of it. I think it comes out of the West Coast of the US. And it's all about feeling very much about what you're feeling right now and what do you need right now. And it's holistic in the way that the therapist will look at how you're moving. She'll say, oh, that's interesting what you're doing with your hands. Or she will look at how you're dressed. She'll say, oh, that's funny, you're dressed, you know, all in black today.
Wow.
And the therapist will be very reactive to what you are saying. So it's not like typical psychiatry where you go into a room and lie on a couch and just talk and talk and talk, and then maybe the psychiatrist will say a couple of words. It's much more interactive than that. So I might say something and then the therapist would say, that makes me feel really uncomfortable when you say that. Or she might say, when you say that, it feels so right. It feels so right to me. So it's very interactive. And it's also very much about using the imagination and about creativity. So there's an exercise that we do, or that I've done on a number of occasions actually, where you'll picture the emotion that you're feeling and you'll picture it in your body. So for example, if you're feeling scared, my therapist might say, well, where is that fear in your body? So I'll say, well, it's in my stomach. What does it look like? I'd say, well, it looks like, you know, this cannonball with sharp spikes on it. And how big is it? She goes through a whole series of questions so that you can really clearly picture this fear. And then she'll say, and what does it need? And in my case, what it needed was to explode. And then after that, then she'll go into, okay, then what does it look like now? And so it's very much about using your imagination and imagining the future, for example, how you could imagine your future is going to be. So I've done individual therapy and I still do group therapy. And there's a group of, say, 7 or 8 of us with 2 therapists. And it is unbelievably powerful. And I've seen people change just extraordinarily over the period that we've been doing that. So it's been now probably 4 years, I think. And so the reason why I sought out the therapist in the first place was because of this frustration with my work. Because it's like, what am I doing wrong? What is wrong with me? Why is my career not going anywhere?
And did you, at that time, did you know it was this style of therapy that you wanted?
creativityfound.co.uk is the place to go to find workshops, courses, supplies, kits, and books to help you get creative. So if you're looking for your own Creativity Found experience, go have a browse to see what's on offer. And if you can help adults to find their new creative passion with your classes, online offerings or kits, visit creativityfound.co.uk/join us to become a member of our brilliant promotional and networking collective. There's a handy link in the show notes.
No, it was fairly random. I just talked to somebody in human resources at work and said, can you recommend somebody? I already knew about Gestalt therapy because my aunt, she lost her husband and he was 42, and then she lost her son who fell over a waterfall 2 years later. So she had a very, very tough time of it. And she did a whole lot of work on grief, and then she became a Gestalt therapist. So I knew about Gestalt therapy from her, but without really knowing what it was.
And how does the therapy and starting writing, how does that connection come about?
Well, my therapist said to me one day, okay, well, take a piece of paper and write down on the piece of paper everything that you would love to be in a perfect job. And so I wrote down a whole lot of different stuff. And then she said, okay, we'll choose one of them. And I went, which one am I going to choose? And I just went, writing. And she said, okay, well, there's a writing school in France called Aleph, and they've got a 3-day introductory course, so why don't you go off and do that? And so I did. And I had 3 days in this grotty basement. It's in Rue Saint-Jacques, which is it's about 500 meters from Notre Dame. And there were 10 of us sitting around the table with a tutor. And it was just amazing. I was just on a high for 3 days, and it was doing exercises. So she would give us a subject and get us to write for 45 minutes and then read out what we'd written. And it was so natural to me. And it was just like I was slotting into part of me that had been waiting there that I hadn't used for 40 years.
I must just point out that you are Australian, but this course you were doing in French, so you were writing in French.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So I've been living in France now since 1996.
How did you find writing in French? Did you find it restrictive in any way, or did it flow very easily for you?
I wasn't trying to write perfect French. And my written French is, you know, it's okay. I still make mistakes, but it's okay. I tend to write in a way that's very direct, because written English tends to be more direct than written French. So, but I wasn't trying to write perfect French. I was trying to get down on the page what I could see. I think my role as a writer is to write down as faithfully as possible what I can see in my image, in my imagination.
Yeah. So in a way, it doesn't necessarily matter what the language is that it comes out in, as long as it comes out.
Yeah. And then I get people to correct my S's and my E's that I've left off, and they'll sometimes say that doesn't really make sense, or you wouldn't say it like that. And you know, I get people to go back through it and correct it. My long-suffering husband has been very kind enough to do that for me.
Oh. I love sharing my guests' stories with you, but podcasting isn't cheap. There are hosting fees and software costs, tech to buy, and time to invest in planning and editing to make sure the guests sound great and listeners hear the best content. If you'd like to financially support Creativity Found, please visit ko-fi.com/creativityfoundpodcast. I know that you have since then started to write longer pieces. You joined another course, didn't you?
Yeah, so after I did the 3-day introductory course, I then enrolled with the LF doing what they call modules. So they were 3-month modules. We would have an assignment. It was over the internet. So we'd have an assignment. We'd have a week to write, and then we would get everybody else's work, and then we'd have a week to write comments on their work. And so then at the end of the 2 weeks, then you got back everybody else's comments on your work, and it was really, you know, incredibly exciting to when they started coming in. And then the tutor would write a longer piece commenting on what you'd written. And so I did 3 of their modules. I had this idea. I was on holidays in New Zealand, and because of the writing course with Aleph, what I realized is that often you just need to have a starting point, and you go from that starting point and just see where it leads you. And I was singing a song. I was learning a song which is called "The Seduction," which is by Verdi. It was an early Verdi song, And it was a song about a young girl who was seduced by an older man, and she thought that they were going to get married, and it turned out that he had different ideas. And so she then has her baby and then dies. And this all happens in the space of, you know, four short pages of music. And I felt like she was really hardly done by, not only by the man, but also by Verdi. It's like what she must have gone through, this fictional woman. And so I suddenly realized that maybe I could use the songs that I was singing as the starting point for writing. And so from there, I wrote something from that song. So it was in three parts. The first part was from the point of view of the man going into her room late at night and seducing her. And then the second part was from her mother talking about how her daughter had come to see her and told her what had happened, and then they waited and it turned out she was pregnant. And then she'd had to take her daughter into the monastery, and how devastated she was about that. And then the third part was the girl in the monastery who knew she was dying, who just had the baby and knew she was dying. And then from there, I took other songs that I was learning and wrote texts from them. And that was my first one-woman show. So there were five songs and then five texts inspired by the songs. And when I did that, what people said was, yeah, well, that's great, but if you want to actually do something in a theatre, you're going to need to have something that's a bit more, got a bit more structure to it, and it's a bit more unity to it. And so from there, I started writing another show, which was just text, and it ended up being nine short stories about the history of the world, and starting with a father and his daughter looking at the earth and from outer space somewhere. And she's saying, "Daddy, what's that blue and green ball? And why is it blue and green?" And then they start talking about, well, because there's water and there's air, and why do you need water and why do you need air? And then it goes through, I mean, basically just various points of history that I felt inspired to write about. So it's the first bacteria that splits off, and the two bacteria start fighting with each other because they say, "I was here first," and "I was here first." "No, I was here first." And then it ends up with the Mona Lisa looking out through her thick plate of glass at the Louvre and seeing the devastation that climate change is wreaking on the Louvre. So all the pictures are falling off the walls, and so that was the one woman show, which I then acted in a theatre in Paris. And then I felt like I wanted to do a longer things and write in English, because writing in French, it's, you know, it's okay, but it is just so much easier to write in English. And so I started doing a novel writing course it's actually in Australia through the internet. So I'm now onto my third draft of that.
Oh, wow. So not only a one woman show, but there's also a novel in there as well.
Yeah. It's so at this stage with a novel, I've written about 20,000 words. It's a completely different ballgame from writing short stories. So I'm learning a lot about structure, how important structure is. I'm wondering what's going to happen next. I know what the beginning is. I know what the end is, but the middle, I'm really got no idea. So I'm a bit worried about that.
That will come.
Well, I hope so. I'm hoping that some sort of logic between the middle and the end that will somehow reveal itself to me. So.
How exciting for you as well as for us. Going back to the one woman show, so we've talked about writing, but there's more to this than just the writing, because you actually have produced, rehearsed and put on a show in front of an audience. So can you tell me a bit more about that process?
Yeah, sure. because I'm still working with my seeing teacher, so I still have seeing lessons once a week. And she said, well, I can help you put this, well, I think I asked her, I said, you know, can you help me put this on? And my initial vision was that I would just be reading my texts. And she's also done a lot of directing. First of all, she said to me, well, you know, you really should learn them off by heart. And then you can still have your texts with you if you need them. And so that was the first step. So I started learning them off by heart. So I'd be catching the metro or walking in the street and I'd have my piece of paper in front of me and I'd be talking to myself like some crazy woman. So I gradually learned them off by heart. And then she said, well, maybe we can actually, you know, make these a bit more interesting. So maybe you can be playing, actually acting a bit more. She also got me to find a musician. So I had a pianist who composed music for each of the pieces. So he was on stage with me. And she was very clever in the way she just got me to do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing until it was really a very professional performance with, you know, lights, and it was in a professional theatre, and I had the theatre, and there were, you know, over 100 people were in the audience. So, yeah, it was all very exciting.
Gosh, well done. That's brilliant. Mm. Going back to the start of how you discovered these wonderful things, have these pursuits helped with the career dissatisfaction that you had felt?
Yes. There was one point at work where I'd said to them, I'd like to have a day off a fortnight to write. And so they said, yeah, that's fine. Take off you can have your day off. And I'd also become a mediator at work. You know, I work with very, very nice people. It's a very good place to work. It's interesting work. And for a while there, that was okay. So I had my work, my friends at work. I had my day writing once a fortnight. I was still singing. I was doing a bit of mediation at work. And that was sort of okay. And then as time went on, I thought, well, it's still not what I want to be doing. And so then I started working with, you know, another coach, and she has been working with me to actually become a coach. And so she said, how can you take all this extracurricular stuff that you've been doing, so the singing, the writing, the mediation, the gestalt therapy, how can you make that your work? So I set up a company in 2019 to be doing coaching. And initially I thought it was going to be more public speaking coaching, because it was about, you know, the singing, how you use your voice, how you use your voice in public, all the things that I'd learned when I was doing my one woman show. And recently, the more I work with clients, the more it's becoming really about life coaching and about working with women to give them confidence, working with women who are in the same situation that I was in and being frustrated with work. A lot of women aren't good at speaking up for themselves. So I've been doing a webinar, for example, on women being interrupted in meetings and about what you can do about that. The focus is shifting. So the focus now is much more about giving women confidence and how can I use my creativity and their creativity to give them confidence and work out what they really, really want in their lives. This morning I did my very first masterclass and I was planning to talk about fear. We ended up talking about something completely different. Being able to bring my creativity, the gestalt therapy, all of that into helping other people is just so rewarding. And part of all that too is the podcast. So I launched my podcast, Brave New Women. And it's the reason for the podcast is so that women can speak up and have a platform to speak on and talk about the things that are important to them, and also reflect back to them that what they're doing is really important and worthwhile. And so many women say, oh, yeah, you know, anyone would have done that. And I'm saying to them, well, no, you did that. It wasn't just anyone that could have done that. And also for the podcast, it's to say, well, look, world, a lot of women have been written out of history, but look what they're doing. These women are doing incredible things. So it's to change the way that women are perceived as well.
Brilliant. That all sounds so full. I'm assuming that both of those things, the coaching and the podcast, have a place in your future. Generally, do you have plans going forward?
Well, the plans are to, as soon as it's financially viable, to resign from my job at the bank, which I'm still doing. My aims for this year are that I can resign, that I can make the coaching financially viable, that I get the novel finished, and if I can, I've got another one-woman show that I've written and started rehearsing but haven't been able to do because of COVID. There's a Schumann song cycle called The Loves and Lives of a Woman, and it's eight songs about a woman who sees a man and she falls in love, and then they get married and they have a baby, and then the last song, he dies. And I wrote several versions of this, and they didn't work and they didn't work and they didn't work. And then it ended up being, so it would be a song, and then me, so her, I called her Clara. And so 19th century Clara would sing about what was happening in her life. And then me as 21st century Cecilia would respond to that. And it's almost like a dialogue between her and me. And we talk about what love is, and we talk about death, and we talk about the fact that she's created and creativity, the fact that she's created by this guy called Adalbert von Chamisso, who's the poet who wrote the poems, and that she's created by Schumann, and also that she's created by me, because I've then created something around her and given her more substance and more personality. So I'm hoping that at some stage, someone suggested the other day that I could do it in as streaming, but I'm hoping that at some stage I will be able to get that off the ground as well.
Yes, brilliant. That sounds really fascinating. Streaming, that sounds like an interesting idea as well. Mm. That's been really insightful. Thank you so much, Cecilia. How can people contact or connect with you?
I'm on LinkedIn. So if you look up Cecilia Poulin on LinkedIn, there's a Brave New Women Facebook page, so you can find me there. Or you can look at my website. So it's just www.ceciliapoulin.com.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Cecilia.
Well, thank you, Claire. It's been a pleasure.
Creativity Found is an Open Stage Arts production. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please feel free to subscribe, rate, and review. If you would like to help fund future episodes, you can buy us a coffee. That's Ko-Fi, the online platform that helps creators receive financial support from fans of their work. Visit ko-fi.com/creativityfoundpodcast. If you have found your creativity as an adult, and would like to talk to me for future episodes, drop me a line at claire@openstagearts.co.uk. On Instagram or Facebook, follow @creativityfoundpodcast, where you will find photos of our contributors' artworks and be kept abreast of everything we're up to.